महाराजा हर्षादा सहसा पतन निशम्य मुखतो हरिकीर्तनम् भ्रतुर्नाम महाराजा प्रसादा सहसा पतन। चैंट प्लीज। मानस्या तो हरि कीर्तनम् महाराजा मानस्या अथो हरिकीर्तनम् अथोराज महाराजा सापतन। माताजी प्लीज। शम्यामहमानस्या निशम्या हियरिंग म्रियमानस्या ऑफ द डाइंग मैन मुखता फ्रॉम द माउथ हरि कीर्तनम चैंटिंग ऑफ द होली नेम ऑफ द सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हेड भर्तु नाम द होली नेम ऑफ देयर मास्टर महाराजा ओ किंग पार्षदा द ऑर्डर कैरियर्स ऑफ विष्णु सहसा इमीडिएटली अपतन अराइव्ड। ट्रांसलेशन पर्पोर्ट बाय डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील प्रभुपाद। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। ट्रांसलेशन माई डियर किंग द ऑर्डर कैरियर्स ऑफ विष्णु The Vishnu Dutas immediately arrived when they heard the holy name of their master from the mouth of the dying Ajamil, who had certainly chanted without offense because he had chanted in complete anxiety. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks, Hari Kirtanam Nisamyapatam Katam Bhutasya Bhartur Nama Bruvatha. The order carriers of Lord Vishnu came because Ajamil had chanted the holy name of Narayan, Narayana. They did not consider why he was chanting. While chanting the name of Narayana, Ajamil was actually thinking of his son, but simply because they heard Ajamil chanting the Lord's name, the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, immediately came for Ajamil's protection. Hari Kirtan is actually meant to glorify the holy name, form, pastimes and qualities of the Lord. Ajamil, however, did not glorify the form, qualities or paraphernalia of the Lord. He simply chanted the holy name. Nevertheless, that chanting was sufficient to cleanse him of all sinful activities. As soon as the Vishnu Dutas heard their master's name being chanted, they immediately came. In this regard, Srila Vijaya Dvaja Tirtha remarks, Anena Putra Sneham Antarena Prachinadrishtu Balad Udbhutya Bhaktya Bhagavan Nama Sankirtanam Kritam Iti Jnanayate. Ajamil chanted the name of Narayana because of his excessive attachment to his son. Nevertheless, because of his past good fortune in having rendered devotional service to Narayana, he apparently chanted the holy name in full devotional service and without offenses. ಓಂ ಅಜ್ಞಾನ ತಿಮುರಂದಸ್ಸಿಗೆ ನಂಜನಾ ಶಲಾಖಾಯ ಚಕ್ಷೂರ್ ಉನ್ಮಿಲಿತಮೇನ ತಸ್ಮಾಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುವೇ ನಮಃ. ನಮೋ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮತಿ ದೇವಮೃತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನೀತಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ. ನಮೋ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮತಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನೀತಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ. ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವೇ, ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಣೆ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶತಾರಿಣೆ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶಿವಸದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಸೊ ದಿ ಆಚಾರ್ಯಸ್ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪ್ಲೈನ್ ದಟ್ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಅಜಾಮಿಲ್ ವಾಸ್ ಅಬ್ಸಾರ್ಬ್ಡ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಪ್ರಾಸ್ಟಿಟ್ಯೂಟ್ ಹಿ ಗಾಟ್ ದ ಮರ್ಸಿ. ವಿ ಶುಡ್ನ್ ಗೆಟ್ ಎನಿ ರಾಂಗ್ ಐಡಿಯಾ, ಬಟ್ ದ ಪಾಯಿಂಟ್ ಈಸ್, even though Ajamil was sinful and he was very absorbed in his relationship with his prostitute wife and children, he did not commit offenses. He did not commit offenses to the Vaishnavas. That's what the Acharyas highlight. This actually two kinds of offenses. One is called Vajra Lepa and the other one is called Dhuli Lepa. Dhuli Lepa means like a mark, like if you put a cup or something for a long time, it collects dust around and then creates a shape. But then when there is a thunderbolt, if a thunderbolt hits a rock, it also creates an impression. But the big difference. So Vajra Lepa, the mark created by the thunderbolt, that's like the aparad. And Dhuli Lepa is like the mark created from dust, that's like sinful activities. So Krishna is actually willing to give mercy even to those who are sinful. But Krishna withholds his mercy to those who are offensive, especially to the Vaishnavas. So in this regard, Prabhupada explains how Ajamil fell down circumstantially, due to circumstance. He was not willingly, he was not willingly falling down. And Prabhupada also explains that Krishna's mood. Prabhupada said that in one lecture Prabhupada was giving in this chapter, and Prabhupada said, this rascal Ajamil was my devotee, but now somehow or other is fallen. So Prabhupada said, Krishna says that, all right, he's so attracted to his children. So Krishna gave him the intelligence, now you keep your son's name Narayana. So Krishna inspired within, being grateful to all the services that Ajamil has done, and inspired Ajamil to keep the name of one of his sons as Narayan. And the purport also, Prabhupada says that Ajamil was actually thinking of his son, but simply because the Vishnudutas heard Ajamil chanting the Lord's name, they immediately came for Ajamil's protection. Krishna is so merciful. I was remembering how when I was a kid, I went to a convent, and that was the only best school in town, actually. But everybody there was, the people who were running the schools, they're like nuns. They're nuns. They're fully devoted nuns. But then every morning when they did the attendance to see who is in the classroom, there were like about 60 of us, and there's at least like 5 or 6 Narayanas they would chant, you know. These are like nuns covered with their, covering their hair in white cloth. They say like Satya Narayana, that was my name. And there's a Karthik Narayana, and there's a Narayana, and there's a Badri Narayana, and there's Vishnumurti, and there's Krishna. So they're like chanting like so many holy names of Krishna. I was just thinking, even though they're not aware, I'm sure they were getting mercy. Some of them were doing that still for like decades, chanting every morning the names of Krishna or Vishnu. This is the mercy. Krishna is so merciful. He's willing to give blessings to anyone who approaches him, even unknowingly. So merciful. Just like in the end of the Damodar Ashtakam, Satyavrata Muni prays that Kuvera Atmajo Baddha Murtyaiva Yadva Tvaya Mochito Bhakti Bhajo Kritaucha. Satyavrata Muni, just like when a lawyer is speaking in a court, he quotes something from the past to the judge to, you know, make his point. Similarly, Satyavrata Muni, after glorifying Krishna, is saying, I heard you gave your causeless mercy to these two guys called Nalakuvara and Manigriva. And Satyavrata Muni says, I also heard they were drunk. So Satyavrata Muni, showing their example, citing their example, saying, I also want the same mercy. Tata prema bhaktim. I don't want anything else. I want the exact same flavor. Tata prema bhakti swakame prayacha. Namokshe grahome sti damodaraya. So Krishna and his pure devotees are always thinking how to give mercy and how to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. Especially like Srila Prabhupada, of all the great Vaishnava acharyas in the history, is done something extraordinary. When the sloka, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke, Prithivite Yacha Yatajat, how does it go? Achyata Nagaradi Gram, Sarvatra Prachara Haiva Mora Nam. Many devotees actually thought it was like a poetic statement, and they thought it's not possible. They thought maximum it will spread within India and in every town and village, but not around the world. But Prabhupada actually took it seriously and he proved it. That is the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction. It's like one of my friends, he was telling me, he's actually from Poland. And he was traveling with Indradumna Maharaj and the crew. And they were in transit in Hong Kong. And my friend likes red. He always wears red t-shirt and khaki pants. This is like his uniform. He has so many sets of the same thing. Red top. And so anyway, he was in transit in Hong Kong and he went to this store. And then he saw a red t-shirt. It was a very nice t-shirt, so he wanted to buy it. And then he went inside the store and happened to be, the store owner happened to be an Indian man. So my friend asked him, I want to try this t-shirt before I can buy it. And this person said, okay, I usually don't allow, but okay. So my friend took off his shirt that he was wearing to put on the new t-shirt. And the owner, shop owner, saw that he had a Brahmin thread. He's like, hey, hang on, what you wearing? What you got there? Which is a Brahmin thread. And this person was so shocked, he almost had to like drink some water and sit down. He's like, hey, where are you from? My friend said, from Poland. Why are you wearing that? He said, I'm a Brahmana. I said, you're a Brahmana? And then my friend preached to him for like 20 minutes. About how Brahmana is not by birth and, you know, Prabhupada's teachings, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction. And then this person, this shop owner ended up giving this devotee free t-shirt. Because he's never seen anything so far out, you know. He was like shocked. So this is the devotee's mercy. Prabhupada's mercy is delivering, regardless who we are, is delivering us. It's like these memories I heard recently. Srutta Kirti Prabhu was remembering how Prabhupada was actually visiting New York, and there was such an amazing reception. And there was actually this older devotee who had fallen away from Krishna consciousness, so much so that he was actually eating meat also. Sometimes devotees fall down to intoxication like that, but this devotee went so far that he went back into eating meat and he was criticizing Prabhupada and He was saying like, you know, Prabhupada took best of my years. I gave my best of my life to Prabhupada. So he was regretting like that. He was not grateful. But he would always come to the restaurant, Govinda's, to take prasad. So one day there was reception and this devotee who's fallen down asked, what's going on? What's the reception for? And the devotees told him like, Prabhupada is coming. So everybody was in anxiety, you know, this guy is here and Prabhupada is coming, hope he doesn't, you know, say anything bad and like this. And as everybody was in anxiety, especially like Shruta Kirti Prabhu's wife, Prabhupada's car pulled in and Prabhupada came out. And Prabhupada went directly to this devotee, you know, who is a blasphemer and, you know, who's grown long hair and beard and who eats meat. And Prabhupada went and started rubbing his hair and said, how are you? And this person was like completely like transformed. And Prabhupada said, so, you're going to cook for me while I'm here? And everybody was shocked. So one sannyasi ran to Prabhupada and whispered to him, Prabhupada, this person eats meat. And he blasphemes you. And Prabhupada just ignored that and said again to this person, so, you're going to cook for me while I'm here? And this person was like completely forgot all the envy and all the thing. And he's like, yes, Srila Prabhupada, I would love to cook for you. Like this, he became completely transformed. And all the devotees couldn't believe, especially the new ones, you know, Prabhupada is like... But Prabhupada was seeing that even though this person may have problems, but the only solution to problems is to engage him in devotional service. There is no other medicine, actually. Whatever it is, the only solution is to engage him in Krishna's service. And Prabhupada has given him initiation and taken charge of his life. So Prabhupada was considering that it's my duty to deliver this person. And then, more amazingly, Prabhupada walks into the temple room and then runs into this Mataji, who made so many problems for the devotees in the temple, and she was breaking like all the principles within the temple and lied to Prabhupada, and she called herself the daughter of Toyota and this and that. She made so many problems, and they wrote to Prabhupada and Prabhupada wrote back to them how to deal with her, so on and so forth. Prabhupada actually personally did their wedding ceremony for Bali Mardan and this Mataji. Everybody criticizes, you know, nowadays about this and that, but Prabhupada was not critical. He was so merciful. Just like this devotee Bali Mardan, he was a sannyasi before. But then later on, Prabhupada personally conducted his wedding. This is love, this is mercy, you know. And then, this wife of Bali Mardan did so many things that no one even wanted to see her face. But then Prabhupada walks up to her and says, so, you're going to open a gift store in the temple? And then she's like, yes, Prabhupada, I would love to open a gift store in the temple and serve you. Everybody's like, what is Prabhupada doing? We're trying to get rid of these guys like anything. But Prabhupada is coming back and, you know, bringing these people back. But these people were moved. They were touched. They were so inspired. Prabhupada was seeing how to take these people somehow or other back to Krishna. How to somehow or other give them service. Otherwise, what benefit is there just by criticizing each other? So this is the mood. This is the spiritual world. It's so beautiful. We think that sense gratification is so nice. But spiritual life or spiritual activities or service is like drinking poison. We do it like with so much, you know, complaints and... like that. So, but this is the opposite. In a diseased condition, we feel like that, but the opposite is that the spiritual world is so beautiful. Spiritual activities are so beautiful. Sense gratification like poison. One time when I was coming along, one devotee asked my Guru Maharaj about this pastime, a Jamil pastime. And this devotee said, what a way to live, what a life. full life of sense gratification till you're 80, and then boom, somehow or other you chant the name of Narayan, and then there you are in the spiritual world. What a way to live, what a way to go. And everybody was laughing, but my Guru Maharaj was explaining to him how we think in the diseased condition that we want to have a full life of sense gratification because that's what we think is so beautiful. And we don't like to chant the names of Narayana or Hari or Krishna. So let it be just once or twice at the end and get it done with. And then you, boom, you transfer to somewhere where you don't have to suffer anymore. But it's not like that. We constitutionally, my Guru Maharaj was explaining how we're constitutionally designed to serve Krishna. And the real happiness is actually to glorify Krishna and serve Krishna and like that. But in the conditioned state, we're thinking the opposite. Thinking that sense enjoyment is actual real pleasure and service to Krishna is like drinking poison. But the Bhagavatam is showing us how it is not so. Bhagavatam is actually teaching us the art of dying. And there's so many societies teaching art of living. But Bhagavatam is actually showing us how to die. How to die. It's like this one devotee's daughter had a terminal illness and she was dying. And the devotee, Mataji, went to Prabhupada and she said with like tears in her eyes, you know, Prabhupada, my daughter is dying, hoping to get some, you know, sympathy from Prabhupada, some soothing words. Prabhupada just yelled at her, what have I been telling you all these years? You have not heard? We're all dying. What's so special about your daughter dying? We're all dying. That's all there is in this world. It's a martya loka. And Prabhupada was bringing her to consciousness that she's dying, but you're also dying, I'm also dying. She's dying today, you're going to die tomorrow, I die the next day. So what you have heard from my lectures, every lecture I'm telling you that you're dying. So this is the mercy of the spiritual master and Krishna. They're always reminding us of the reality. And we are fortunate, and if we are fortunate, we will actually take guidance. It's so important in spiritual life. It's a science. Because in the material world, you want to educate yourself so much that you don't want to take any guidance. You want to educate yourself so much so you don't have to beg. All these things, we want to fill ourselves with some mundane knowledge and money so we don't have to approach anyone. The spiritual life is opposite. Definitely, each one of us need guidance. It's like my Guru Maharaj was saying in Russia. There was a devotee that got into some predicament, but because he took guidance from the devotees, he was actually freed from the problem. This devotee was such an amazing web designer. He was actually an amazing designer that he was so popular. And then, once a slaughterhouse, like some butchers approached him and asked him to make an ad for their company. And the devotee didn't know how to refuse them, so he said, I'm so busy, he kept refusing. But they kept coming back. And then the devotee said, okay, let me do this. So he tried to give them a quote, like a price, that's 10 times than what he usually charges. Some ridiculous amount. So the devotee thought, oh, this will actually scare them away. But they were happy to give him that and more. And then still, the devotee actually didn't know what to do. So he actually directed these guys to another friend of his who's also a good designer. So these butchers went to this other friend and got the job done and paid him big amount, paid the other guy big amount to get the job done. And that person felt so grateful for this devotee to have sent the business to him. So he wanted to come and give 25% of the profit to the devotee. So the devotee is trying like anything not to get the money, but the money keeps coming. So he was scratching his head. He went to the temple devotees and said, "This is my position. What to do with this money?" And the devotees explained, because it's so sinful, if you directly engage it in Krishna's service, then... So they bought some deities with the money. So that way he was saved from this predicament. So this is the position. We all have to take guidance. That way we can move forward and we can understand the reality of this world. What we think, what we see is not actually reality. It's thick illusion. It's like this, when I was in Melbourne last year, some of my god brothers, brahmacharis, they invited me, like, "Can you come with us? We're going to see this one Mataji. She's actually dying, leaving her body." So they took me and then I was singing to her like Sadgoswami Ashtakam and Narsingha prayers and like this. But this Mataji was only like in her 30s. You can see in the walls, you know, she has many of her wedding photos. The wedding was like 4 years ago or something. You can see like she was like nicely dressed, full of jewelries and healthy, and the husband is there. And like this, but the just couple of years later, she's like wrecked with cancer. So much pain and so much suffering. She was actually in her last days. This foolish nurse has actually come and kept a coffin in the house and gave the directions to the husband how to deal with the body after she leaves. And that apparently the wife was also listening to this, and it kind of made her much more in anxiety. So this is the position of the living entity. What we think, generally, like you see people, like especially like Indians, when we go to Australia, there's so many Indians I met. Everybody was so absorbed in the permanent residency and they're buying homes and, you know, dollar exchange values. But then when I saw this Mataji, it was completely, you know, different. He was so, if I were to go to her with like a, you know, a briefcase full of like $500 bills, it was like absolutely no relevance to her. Whether she was an Australian resident or Indian resident, doesn't matter. All the jewelries, nothing made sense to her. But what made sense to her was the chanting we were doing. She was so grateful. She couldn't even say thank you, but the way she looked at us, we could see like, my God. She then came to us like, you know, we went to preach to her, but just seeing her like she was preaching to us by her example. It's like Sridhar Maharaj said, or ISKCON Sridhar Maharaj, before he passed away, he said his only regret in life was he didn't take enough time to associate with the devotees and serve the devotees. Of course, he's taking a humble position. We all know that. But just to set example for us, he was saying like that. Generally, the tendency is that because we all live so close together, we become very familiar. Like the example given, like a lady who lives in the forest of sandalwood trees, even to light some fire to cook food, she also uses the same sandalwood trees, even though it's so valuable. Similarly, all we know is the devotees, so that's who we live with. So we treat each other like, you know, many times very, we take it for granted. But that's very unfortunate, because the more we are conscious, like I was explaining before, Krishna actually can deal with Dhuli Lepa. Krishna is even willing to forgive somebody who is committing sinful activities. But somebody who is committing offenses to his devotees, Krishna gets rid of them. So these are the reality that we should hear and try to understand. This is it. This everything else is avidya. It's not vidya. Avidya means ignorance. Whatever else we hear is avidya. That's why one time Prabhupada actually saw the Time magazine. One devotee was showing Prabhupada Time magazine. And Prabhupada looked at the Time magazine. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, this is a very dangerous book." And the devotees were saying, "Why is this dangerous? It's a Time magazine. It's like so popular, sold millions of copies." Prabhupada said, "It's dangerous because it makes this world look attractive." So therefore Prabhupada said, "It's dangerous." So this way, Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vaishnavas were always reminding us, like Achyuta Prabhu gave a wonderful class yesterday. Whatever we're doing now will be tested at the time of death. That is the reality. Everything else is so insignificant and irrelevant to the soul. Everything else we're doing. It's like sometimes we see this Discovery Channel or some channel they're showing about animal behavior. And you see this rat running around. I saw this one documentary recently. This is like a rat running around trying to food. And all of a sudden, there's a snake. The rat has no clue that the snake is going to come and eat him. He's so going on about his business. But then the snake is hungry and he exactly knows where to hide and how to strike. And immediately at the least expected, he just like injects poison and swallows him up. This is like our position. We're running around, you know, trying to fix this situation, that situation. And then the death is just hiding, trying to gobble us up. This is actually the real knowledge. This is real knowledge. People want to live a long life. In Kali Yuga, everybody is thinking. I will never forget this friend of mine, he told me, you know, smoking cigarette is not so bad because the technology is becoming so advanced. They'll be able to change any part of your body just for some dollars. So just enjoy and then you can change your lungs later on. So this is the kind of concept people have when they want to live a long life. Long life means, like we're reading in the pastime of Ajamyo, simply long life of sinful activities, nothing else. That's it. That we imagine people in Kali Yuga, where the chance of anybody committing any pious activities? There's no chance, as you're by default forced, condemned to act sinfully. And then the longer you live, the more sinful you are, and then the next life it's all like, you know, downward spiral. This is the position. But the Vedas explain it's better to have a short life with full Krishna consciousness. That is actually real success. It's wonderful. It's like I was reading this book recently, Salted Bread, the experiences of devotees in the former Soviet Union. And there was this devotee who was only like a couple of years old in Krishna consciousness, but he was put in jail. Oh my God, it's such a sad story. They were beating them like anything. They were beating them so badly that, you know, the teeth would fall off and the spine would break and they lose their eyes, and just for spreading Krishna consciousness. The government saw that, you know, if people read these books, we're not able to control them anymore. So they treated the devotees worse than they would treat the most dangerous criminals in the country. And the devotees were put in jail and they were asked, "Just sign this document, we will release you." And the document says, "By taking to Krishna consciousness, I've become half crazy. I don't know why I took this book. I don't know what these people are doing. I regret it," so on and so forth. But the devotees wouldn't sign. So they were sent to labor camps and prisons. And this devotee, Sachisutta, is explained, he became so ill in the prison because they were like minus 50 degrees winter, and they're not given any socks or heater or nothing. And this devotee became so ill with that tuberculosis, and he was sent to actually a prison hospital. And then he actually died in the prison hospital. But his roommate has actually met the devotees on Harinam and told the glorious departure of this devotee, Sachisuta. The roommate of Sachisuta actually told the devotees, even though Sachisuta Prabhu was so sick, sometimes he would cough about 23 and a half hours in a day. And he was so sick, he was not even able to go to the bathroom, but he would sit down every day and chant all his 16 rounds, even in that condition. And the friend, the roommate, the hospital cellmate, told the devotees, I was actually atheist, but to see this devotee, Sachisuta, I have to become Krishna conscious. There's such an exemplary person. All they were given is bread and fish. So sometimes the fish would be touching the bread, so the devotee wouldn't even eat anything all day, and just chant. So one day this devotee Sachisuta asked his cellmate, can you help me? And the person said, sure. So the devotee Sachisuta asked his friend to shave him up and give him a little sika. And the bathroom, it's explained, is so cold, freezing cold. Everything is frozen. Still he managed to take a shower, shave his head, leave a little sika. And he took his bed sheet and put it on like a dhoti. And he made garland out of some color papers and put on tilak with toothpaste. And this way, he was sitting down chanting his rounds. And the friend had to go out for an injection. And then when the friend comes back, he lay down and looks at Sachisuta, and Sachisuta is smiling, and but the friend keeps talking to him, but he's no answer. So when he touches him, he falls like he's already left his body like that. And the prisoner is screaming. He said, you guys killed this innocent poor boy who was so God conscious. What other wrong did he do? So this devotee was leaving his body, like we read some great yogis like Dhritarashtra or, you know, Kardamuni, they're all leaving their bodies at their own will. So even though it was only a 2-year-old devotee, the mercy of Krishna was there that he was able to go back to Godhead. Even as a new devotee, that he has not read even Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the beautiful process of Krishna consciousness. Like Achyuta Prabhu was speaking the other day about in the Nishant Prabhu's place. Very nice class was given by Mukundadat Prabhu Achyuta. And he was explaining the position of Indra. Even though Indra was like so sinful and offensive, like it's explained, even if you kill a cow, for each hair on the body of the cow, you have to go to hell that many times. Because the cow is the pet of Krishna. But Indra, because of his false ego, he was willing to wipe out the entire Vrindavan, which had so many cows and Brajavasis. Can you imagine the offense? Just because he didn't get some sacrifice, some offerings. And then Krishna humiliated him. At the end, because Indra is a devotee, he begged forgiveness through Surabhi. Krishna was willing to forgive and accept him again. It's amazing how much, there's no extent, how much sinful activities a conditioned soul can perform, and how much Krishna can forgive, and how much mercy Krishna is willing to give. But like Prabhupada is saying, we shouldn't take advantage of that. But the point is, what we have given to us is so special. No other religion even have a name of God. But we have so much. We receive so much from Krishna. We are so fortunate. So if we just stayed on the ISKCON boat, like Prabhupada said, if you're in the first class compartment in a train or second class or third class. As long as you're in the train, you are going to the destination. So regardless of whatever we're going through, if we just stay in Krishna consciousness, started by Prabhupada, then we're definitely going home, back to Godhead. So any comments by senior Vaishnavas, corrections, questions? Mukunda Dutt Prabhu.
Thank you for the nice class. I had a question. It seems to me, at least within my experience, there is no universal ethic that one can define as the ethics of Krishna consciousness. So my question is that given, suppose a devotee is in a situation as they were in the former Soviet Union, wherein one has a choice whether to sign a paper and get free to go and preach Krishna consciousness, or to not sign the paper and stand up for the honor or for one's honesty or whatever. Why did those devotees choose that, and is there a right or a wrong decision to make if we were faced with that kind of choice?
From reading the book, I saw that many devotees have actually chosen to run away. And the police would arrest them, beat them, never to be seen again. Because the police would catch you, once on book distribution, they would go directly to your family and harass them like anything, the neighbors and everything. So those devotees never came back. They didn't want anything to do with it. But there are some devotees who are so sincere. They're so sincere. Like Prabhupada, one time the Naxalites were threatening. They told Prabhupada, fly or die. If you come to this gathering, we'll kill you. So Prabhupada said, let's see what Krishna wants. You know, they may say so many things, but, you know, same thing Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj was told. When Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj went to these places, Soviet Union, he was also told by somebody unknown that if you come, we will kill you. And Maharaj said, what is the greater way to die than to die on the battlefield? So these devotees said, they were so sincere, they said, you know, by us signing, it's going to, you know, it's not only they're not doing any service now being in the prison, but by signing it's going to be such a great disservice for Harikesh Maharaj and Prabhupada and all the service, all the books they have distributed. Then they said, let's tolerate. And also it's explained, like from reading the book I understand, they weren't expecting such severe treatment. They thought they got arrested so many times, released so many times, so it will happen again, but then they were sent to prison. And then in the prison, there was a boxer who was a guard. And they would come and beat them every day. And one day the boxer revealed to his friends that my wife won't have sex with me if I don't beat these Hare Krishnas. So that's the reason. Because the wife has just heard some rumor about the Hare Krishnas, so she told the officer, you go and beat them every day. And then one day, the officer, wife and kids, they were coming from a wedding party and the jeep rolled off the cliff and they all died. So all the guards left them alone. They wouldn't want to beat them anymore. So much going on, but this is my limited understanding. Achyuta Prabhu probably would elaborate on it.
I don't know how you can tell that story without crying. I try not to speak about it, but I met some of those devotees, and like Kamalamala and Sannyas, some of those early devotees. These devotees were actually in Armenia, which at that point was part of the Soviet Union. And one of their fathers was the head of the KGB. So Mukunda Dutt was saying, you know, why don't they sign in and go on preaching? You couldn't sign and go on preaching because they had their fingers everywhere. There's no way you could escape them. So you had to either choose, seriously, to either face the consequences or stop being a devotee. And they didn't want to stop being devotees. They didn't want to. They have a very, I don't know if you've met Armenians in your life, but in general as a people, they have a very stiff spine. They're very strong-willed people, in general, generalizing, but they are. So once they fix their mind, they're going to do something. It's very hard to change their mind. So these devotees, they fix their mind that this Krishna consciousness is, it's good. We know it. That's why we're devotees. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing insidious. There's nothing, you know, we're not harming society in any way. So they decided, we're not doing anything wrong here. So we're going to stand up for what we believe in. And they decided to stand up and face the consequences. Now that story you told about the guard's vehicle rolling over, it wasn't just that. The devotees all along had been taking this beating without any opposition of any kind. They would just be beaten and just go on. And then one day one of them snapped and cursed him. It was so shocking. The other prisoners were shocked. Because every day the devotees were getting beaten and not saying anything in their own defense. And then finally one of them snapped and cursed that guard. That, you know, I curse you that you're so mean. And then they died.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice explanation. Amala Bhakta, Prabhu.
Thank you again for a nice class, and thank you, Archita, for elaboration on that. Very nice. There were two points I wanted to make. For one thing, is that very often a devotee who has come to cherish and truly treasure Krishna and the philosophy that goes with it, and comes to a very solid realization that one of the ways in which he can truly show or prove to Krishna that he loves him is that if Krishna puts him into a situation where there will be pain and there will be suffering, that he will take the pain and suffering as a way of saying, I'm willing to take any and all suffering because you're worth it. You're so valuable, you're so merciful, you're so kind, and through this pain and suffering, I will become even more purified than I have become. So they use it and think of it as not as a materialist might think, aha, I'm being hindered or impeded for my sense gratification, but no, actually, I'm being given a means by which I can draw closer to Krishna and show, and not deserve it, not want anything in particular in return for this, but simply thinking that the suffering or the pain or the beating is a way in which they can draw closer to Krishna, because they know Krishna is so merciful that he will acknowledge and recognize such sacrifice and draw them closer to his heart. So that is one way of looking at it, rather than looking at it from this point of view of a sense gratifier. I'm going to get so much pain, so much suffering, stuff like that. Another point that I wanted to make about that you had made in the course of your talk is that somebody you had mentioned said that how wonderful it is you can live 88 years and have so much sense pleasure, so much joy, so much happiness. What a great life that is. But really, that's a very short-sighted view of Ajamil. Because as we can see from the text, that Ajamil was really in very great anxiety continuously. So much so that because he had to hack a living, get enough money to satisfy his wife with jewelry and bangles and earrings and ankle bells and saris and all of these things, that if he didn't do that, then what would happen is that she would withdraw or withhold the sex that he so much was attached to. So she could use that as a weapon. So anyone who is simply worried that he may not get that sense gratification to which he's so attached and to enslaved and addicted, if he feels it's like his life is about to be taken away. So that anxiety, that uncertainty, that doubt is suffering. And he's suffering every day, and even more so when he steals, when he mugs somebody, or he harms somebody, it does something. Even though his conscience may become dull through that, due to justification, nonetheless, there is suffering and pain tremendously. And and the ultimate pain was when he was, of course, on his deathbed, and was so frightened to see these Yamadutas.
Thank you, Amal Bhakta Prabhu. It's very nice. जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय
You're a better man than